Hi, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Christian.
And we are the Crime Couple.
Welcome to episode 3.
So, we received more feedback, which thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. It means so much to us that you'd like more talk at the beginning and then leave notes in the episode of where to skip forward if they don't want to hear what's going on life update-wise. The unfortunate thing is that I literally have no life updates.
Yeah, I mean, my hair is a little too long, and I need to get that cut, but we went to your mom's pool yesterday. Her mom just got a new pool in the backyard. It's really nice.
Yes.
Played with the little ones. I tossed her cousins, your nieces and nephews into the pool too aggressively.
They cried.
And they cried. I also beaned another one of them with a little splash toy.
Oh
I was
gosh.
Aiming it for your brother-in-law, but caught your little niece instead in the chest. But all fun and games. It was a great weekend. I think we're going to go back next weekend too. So, yeah, doing great. Nicole has a face tattoo now.
Okay, that's a lie. what else is new this week? I don't really think anything. You know, just spent the week working.
Plugging away.
No. So, let's get going with episode 3. I'm so excited to finally tell you what the topic is about. You saw the pictures, right?
I am completely in the dark on this one.
I know, but you saw the pictures on Instagram, right?
Yes,
and
I mean,
like all
obviously
the social
I follow
media
on Instagram.
So where do you think this takes place?
I think this takes place in Des Moines, Iowa.
You already know it's outside the U.S.
Des Moines, Europe. It
Try
takes
place. Harder.
Oh, yes, I remember. Maybe, like, Sydney, Australia?
No, it takes place in Norway.
In Norway, that's, like, a white country, I don't know.
Yeah, they
somewhere.
Are. So, this is actually one of the worst, it would be considered mass shooting, but also a terrorist attack in human history, really.
What year did this start out in?
2011.
So, it was only 8 years ago.
Yeah, do you remember this at all?
Not really sure.
We would have been juniors in high school.
Yeah, I was going through a lot, you know, gained a lot of weight. They had brought back
you were too busy eating to notice what was going on in the news.
100%. 100%. They had Papa John's chicken fingers, you know, at school, so
I really
that's what I remember.
I do not remember this whatsoever at all. Like, which makes me sad because why did I not know about this?
Well, you were studying for tests and being
okay.
In high school.
So, the perpetrator of this attack is named Anders Behring Breivik.
Like the guy from Workaholics.
Anders, yeah, Durs. Yeah, like Durs. So, I'm going to call him Anders throughout because
call him Durs.
Durs. No, he doesn't even deserve that respect to have a nickname.
Oh, he's the antagonist, right?
Yeah, he's the attacker. So, he was born February 13, 1979 in the UK, in London, and his father was named Jen Breivik, and his mother, Wench Behring.
His mother's name was Wench?
Yeah.
That's so demeaning. Why do you name your daughter Wench?
I don't know. It's W-E-N-C-H-E. That's Wench, right?
You're like
Wenche?
You're like Wenchina, short? I don't know.
No, it's not short
for
anything. And it's Norwegian.
That's demeaning.
It's not. Well, Breivik was an No. Try this again. Breivik was an economist for the Norwegian embassy in London, and Behring was a nurse. They divorced when Anders was only a year old, and Behring took him back to Norway with her. Now, here's where it gets very odd, and I spend a lot of time in the early life of Anders because I think it plays a crucial role in who he becomes throughout this episode. I also want to give a big shout out to, I have so many sources. Look at all these. Well, first of all, look at all these links right here. But I do want to give a shout out to the Sofa King podcast. Episode 253 is on this. They did a really good job. Great episode. I also watched the 22 July Netflix film. Great job. Super awesome. However, so social services were seriously concerned with Wedge's ability to parent, and I think it would be irresponsible to not acknowledge that Andre's mother played a crucial role in her son's upbringing, and she's partially to blame for what her son does in this episode. I mean, she really created this monster, and you'll see why. So we'll take it back a bit, because Andre's grandmother contracted polio when Wench was born, so it left the grandmother paralyzed from the waist down. After living in an orphanage for 2 years, Wench came back to her parents, but her father died when she was 8 years old. So, mental health still has so far to go, so I can't imagine how it was when Andre's mother was born, which would probably be in the 50s. And Andre's grandmother was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, and it's probable that she wasn't getting help, but she was also suffering from something. So if it wasn't schizophrenia, it was definitely something, but I do think she was paranoid schizophrenic.
So he has an unhealthy household with people who aren't mentally stable, and they're also going through life traumas, like, back to back.
True, but this is all before Anders is born, but it'll give you really good background on his mom, because she is
a piece of work.
Something else, yeah, for sure. So, in between hallucinations, Anders' grandmother would tell Baring that everything was her fault since she contracted polio when Baring was born. Not healthy. From 8 until 17, Baring took care of her mother. She wasn't allowed to leave the house, didn't go to school, and couldn't have friends over. She eventually fled to Oslo and never spoke to her mother again. She met a man in the city and had a baby girl before meeting Jen Breivik and giving birth to Anders, which was 6 years later. So when Baring returned to Norway, she raised Anders in Oslo's West End, weirdly, in his dad's apartment. So I read an article by TV2, which is a Norwegian news network, that Baring was leaving her kids all alone at night. So her six-year-old daughter was taking care of baby Anders while Baring worked, which is basically exactly what she had to do as a kid, you know? So sad.
Yeah, why would she think anything different like that? That's how she was raised.
I don't know. It's still fucked up. You still need to know better. So Baring went to Norway Center for Child and Youth Psychiatry, known as the SSBU in Norway, whatever it is in Norwegian, which I cannot pronounce. There's so many things and so many names I'm going to butcher. Absolutely not be able to say, so I'm so sorry. But
this is what you get when you pick the out-of-country ones.
Yeah, I've noticed that I've been doing a lot of out-of-country, but I do like it a lot, so.
It's really forcing you to expand your vernacular. Guten Tag.
That's a German.
Same thing.
Well, anyways, she went to the SSBU to help with her, quote, aggressive, hyperactive, and clingy son. And when I say quote, that's direct from her words. So the reports were actually leaked in a book. I can't recall the name of the book at this very moment, but I'm sure it's in the sources somewhere when I post it on the website and in the episode notes.
Your sources are basically a book.
Yeah, it's like a page of links. But anyways, this is all from the TV2 page that I was reading, and she said this. So obviously there is a kind of a dilemma, an ethical dilemma, with the fact that these were even released. Like, these were supposed to be personal, you know. But at the same time, it does put a really good you get really good background on what kind of life this is, because the family spent a few weeks there in 1983, so Anders would be 4, and shortly after, Baring gave Anders up, saying he was excessively active, fidgety, capricious, and prone to unexpected whims.
Wait, so the family would stay in this, like, government facility?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Norway was freaking with it. Like, back in the 80s, they still had help like that. Isn't that crazy? We don't even have that in the U.S. now.
Wow, for whole family. Yeah, no way that would be.
Right? So, Anders went to live with a young couple for a short period of time before Baring, his mom, called off the arrangement and asked for help from the family counseling office in Norway. They sent her back to the SSBU, which is, like I said, the Child and Youth Psychiatry Center in Norway. So when the SSBU performed tests on Anders, he wasn't like his mother described at all. Instead, he was described as a 4-year-old, quote, devoid of any zest for life. Have you ever met a 4-year-old who doesn't shut the fuck up?
Who the hell also describes it as a zest of life?
Well, that was the psychiatrist that said that. Isn't that so sad? They said he was also abnormally organized, didn't play with any other kids, and would wash his hands and wipe his face obsessively. The SSBU counselors also monitored interactions between him and his mom, who was obsessed with, quote, sexual themes, and openly told 4-year-old Anders that she wished he was dead.
Wow. How are they allowing her to be around her son if she's just openly saying these things in front of the psychologists that are watching over them?
So they recommend that they get split up. So I really think that there was sexual abuse going on in the family, because I read a number of reports that said his mom was, quote, very sexual and sexualized her son. And I digged really deep, and you'll see in the source notes at the very beginning, there's a lot of articles. And she died of cancer recently while Anders was in jail. So she did a deathbed confession where she said basically she implied strongly that her brothers raped her. So I think that she was doing something to Anders because because it was Stephanie Marsh of The Independent that mentioned Anders' mother complained to a social worker that he would, quote, force himself on her at night, but also she played a game with him called Who Can Get Their Clothes Off First.
Wow, that is extremely unhealthy. This SBCCU...
SSBU.
SSBU, new short acronym. They... I know we've gone over things in the past and listened to podcasts where either the police or social services fails the family in this case, but they're under direct observation. Like, I don't understand how you can just make a recommendation for them to be split up and they're not forcibly taking them apart.
I'll explain to you why he slipped through the cracks. Because when, during the observations and the testing and everything, his mom constantly watched Anders. So it was like she had all these big mood swings. Like, she was so loving with him, and at the same time she was saying she wished he was dead. So, you know, a 4-year-old can't comprehend that, you know?
Or they can't take that volatility. Mm-mm. They can't take that volatility.
No. So she was irrationally afraid that he would hurt someone, which, oddly enough, she hit Anders in front of the social workers, which it seems like she has no concept of what's happening, because when she did hit him, Anders would mock her, saying that it didn't hurt, which is terrifying.
Wow, they have the, like, unhealthiest relationship, mother-son relationship.
For sure. So, reports from this time show that his home life was clearly a big, big problem, and the psychologists and psychiatrists urged the court to separate him from his mom. So much so that they ended up in court battling it out. But the reason that he slipped through the cracks was because Anders' mom had a really good lawyer, and he was really aggressive, and in the court case, they put a brand new social worker that had never presented a case before against them. So, of course, the mom is going to come out on top. Plus, she got a note from Anders' daycare that he was a happy kid, which she was friends with the daycare ladies.
So, that goes to show you, not even in America, if you have a good lawyer and you know the right people, you can get off with anything.
Yeah. So, it was a huge miscarriage of justice on the part of the SSBU to let this happen, because, you know, they're obviously aware they made mistakes. This was all over the news. They did so many reports, you know. We don't need to tell them anymore that they fucked up. But I have to imagine that these kinds of things happen all over the world all the time. You know, imagine those places in third world countries that don't even have child services, you know?
Right. Families like this just happen, and, you know, the incest, the rape, the other types of abuse just go undocumented in countries that don't have this kind of infrastructure, because it's not a first world, third world thing. Like, it's a human mental disease thing. Like, she was abused by her family, and, you know, thus forward onto it, and God, it's just so awful.
Well, here's the thing, though, is that there's so many people who experience childhood trauma, and they're raised in terrible, you know, environments, but not everyone becomes a mass murderer like he does. So, Anders and his mom, you know, clearly had some great opportunities to get help in Norway, but psychologists knew what Anders would become if he stayed with his mom, and he did. So, part of the condition of his mom keeping him included that the SSBU would perform home checks periodically to ensure the family was doing okay and everything was safe. How many visits do you think they did?
Over how long?
A year.
Five.
They did three altogether.
So not even once a quarter.
No, they did three in like 2 months. So they didn't follow up, nothing. Anders visited his father in the summer until he was 15 years old, at which point they had a falling out and never spoke again. I read a ton of articles about the falling out, and they're all consistent that it happened around this time when he was 15. But Anders said that his father initiated the falling out, and his father said that Anders initiated the falling out. I read an interview by John Henley of The Telegraph, who actually sat down with Anders' dad, Jen Breivik, after what happens, and he seemed so devastated by his son's actions, so full of guilt. He knew that he was partially responsible for this, but obviously hindsight is 20/20, you know? Who really knows what happened? But it does add to the consistent theme of rejection throughout Anders' life, which you'll see, continue to see. He was obviously neglected by his mom, clearly neglected by his dad. So according to Åsne Seerstad, who is the author of One of Us, which is a book about the events that happened in Norway, Anders was into graffiti art and the hip hop scene as a teen, but he was again rejected. You can't just tag any building in Oslo. There's a hierarchy. As with pretty much anything you do, you can't just go in somewhere and be the best of it. You know what I mean? You have to work your way into something. And Anders eventually dropped out of that too and started getting involved with Norway's Progress Party, which is where he began growing his extremist views. And the Progress Party is kind of like the far right. They're very conservative, anti-immigrant, anti I don't know. I don't know that much about it, but they're very conservative. So in Anders' adult years, he claimed that he was a member of the Knights Templar, which was a group that was supposedly trying to eradicate Islam from Europe. But in reality, this group didn't even exist. He just made that up in his head. It was a group back in, you know, early ages that did do Christianity and stuff like that, but it had no relevance to what he was doing.
I think I remember that from National Treasure.
He also spent like 10 hours a day or something crazy like that. I think like 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day
All work day.
playing like Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, like shooting games, all WoW, whatever that is, World of Warcraft, I think it is.
Good job.
He played all of those games for like hours and hours and hours on end.
Disclaimer, so did I, but when I was like 15, 14.
Not when you're like in your late 20s.
No, honestly, no, now that I think about it, my mom was so strict. She'd put like 1 hour on like the stove, and when it was like that time, she was savage, dude. She'd unplug my shit from the wall, like fuck the whole Wi-Fi up just to spite me. Like, you're done. And just, that's my mom.
Yeah, clearly Anders' mom had no control over him whatsoever, which is sad because in 2009, Breivik started a fake farming business, which I say Breivik, I mean Anders. Anders started a fake farming business in 2009 in order to purchase materials to build a bomb. So, fertilizer can be used as an explosive. So, he ordered thousands of pounds of these fertilizers in order to try to build this. So, he actually moved to a rural farm town called Rena in June 2011 to start prepping for what he was about to do. At 3:13 p.m. on July 22nd, 2011, Anders drove a white VW Crafter filled with a ton, a literal ton, 2,000 pounds, which I don't know what that is in kilometer or in kilometers in kilograms.
Thank
With
you for not doing your translation.
I think it's 1,200 kilograms, to be honest with you. Yeah, it is 1,200 kilograms. With explosives into, look at this. Look at this word.
Is it the one thar?
Yeah, the one that's underlined as it's misspelled.
Oh my God.
It's called Regnzervalot.
It sounds like there's jeggings is in the middle of that word. Rejergings,
Skvartala.
Skartavalat.
Okay. Well, it's basically the government buildings. It's like this downtown Oslo. So he parked the car in front of the office of the Prime Minister, the Ministry of Justice and the police, and other government buildings. He lit the fuse on the bomb, waited a few seconds, then walked away to another car at a separate location a few blocks away before the bomb exploded, shattering all the windows of the surrounding buildings for a couple blocks. The blast ended up killing 8 people and injured over 200.
Jesus Christ.
I know, right? Which is so sad, but I actually heard in the Sofa King podcast episode, they said that he had to park somewhere else. All the parking spaces were taken, so he had to park somewhere else. So in reality, if he had parked where he wanted to, the damage would have been exponentially worse.
Thank God for people coming out that day in full effect.
Right? Well, the police began evacuating the city because they thought this was a terrorist attack. They thought maybe there would be more bombings, you know?
I mean, this is a terrorist attack.
Yeah. Well, they weren't really sure what they were thinking. So, there was more traffic than expected as Anders made his way 25 miles north to Utoya Island, where the Labour Party Youth League, which is abbreviated as AUF in Norway, were holding their annual retreat for the children of the Labour Party. There were over 500 kids on the island for the camp that day.
Children of the Labour Party has a very Hitler youthy type vibe to it.
In reality, these people are the far right. They're all about immigration and multicultural, and they're like the Democrats of the United States.
No, the far right is conservatism. Far left is...
I know, I'm saying these people in the Labour Party are far right. I mean, far...
The far left is...
Far people. Left, they're far left. They're like super big Democrats.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they're not far right, sorry. They're far left.
I think earlier you said they were far right.
I think you're dreaming. Well, anyways, according to GQ correspondent Sean Flynn, Anders arrived there a little after 4 p.m. and waited until 5 p.m. to get out of his car because he knew that the ferries to Utoya were on the hour. So he didn't want to leave any time for the guards on the dock to question him, you know? Be like, hey, can we call your supervisor? No, he didn't want any of that. So he waited in his car, and then he flashes a fake ID and pretends to be an officer named Martin Nielsen, who was sent to, quote, secure the island after the bombing. So the ferry takes him. And after all of this goes down, one of Anders' self-stated goals was to actually kill Gro Harlem Brundtland, she was actually the former prime minister known as the, quote, mother of Norway. And she was on Utoya Island speaking earlier that day because her granddaughter was part of the AUF.
So he had one specific target, and that was that political figure.
No, it wasn't just her, but that was one of his goals. But, by the grace of God and bad weather, she left a few hours earlier, literally because of the bad weather. And that's the only reason she survived past that day.
So we have parking and bad weather as two things that severely limited mm-hmm. this douchebag's reign of terror.
For sure. So when you're having a bad day and you think, oh, I can't fucking find parking, or goddamn this stupid fucking rain, just think that rain might be saving your life.
I love your sailor mouth.
Sorry, guys.
I love it. You're that girl that Tom Cruise dates in Top Gun. You're like the Navy flight instructor. You're just cursing.
Okay. So Anders gets to Utoya Island around 5:10. And the head of the camp, Monica Bassey, and an off-duty policeman volunteering as a security guard named Trond Bernstein meet him on the shore. And Bernstein, being a freaking off-duty policeman, obviously was suspicious of Anders because the station did not call to let him know that an officer was coming down. And when he asked if Anders knew other officers, it didn't seem like he did. Like, he wasn't like, oh yeah, you know. And his suspicion wasn't even able to last long because as soon as they turned their back, Anders shot them both in the back and in the head.
Jesus. And to go back to his disguise, was there any other, like, occupation he could have chose to get onto this ferry? Like,
no.
Did he have to choose police officer?
Well, you'll see why he chooses police officer later, too. Because the shooting spree that followed lasted somewhere between 70 to 90 minutes before police arrived. I read varying reports about that time. I think it's like 75 minutes, but I also read it was somewhere about an hour and a half. And it took the lives of more than 69 innocent people. Almost all of them were teenagers. A total of 99 people were shot in the time that he goes there. And more than half of them were shot over 3 times.
Wow. What, do you know what type of weapon he was using?
Yeah, he had a rifle, and he had a handgun, but he brought a ton of ammunition, so he just kept reloading. But you'll find out all about this. Don't worry, I go way into it. Which, it's very sad, because these are all children that are getting hurt, you know?
Why was it all children? Is this, like, a vacation spot, or...?
Well, they were... It's a summer camp.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So... Anders began calling the campers around him, luring them closer, saying that he was there to help as part of the police. You know, he's like, oh, here's the bombings. Like, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you. And then he just takes his weapons and starts shooting all of them. So they start freaking out. You know, all of their friends start dropping dead. And when he shoots these people, it's not like he just shoots them and lets them go so they can pretend to be dead. Every single body that he shoots, he goes up to their head and shoots them and does a headshot.
Wow, so he's, yeah, like you said, he's not letting anyone pretend like they're gonna die. Like, he is going and making sure each person is dead.
Wow. Yeah, because, and he claims, you know, like he said he played Modern Warfare or whatever, World of, or what is it called? Call of Duty.
Oh, so I see why. He was part of the far right group, and he went to the camp of the far left group.
Exactly. So he actually calls 112, which is the equivalent to 911 here, twice during this entire shooting spree to surrender, but both calls are dropped. He like hangs up, and the police said they tried to call him back, but obviously it didn't work.
Is he just gaining his confidence again to go back out and keep shooting?
He's shooting while he's there, while he's calling.
Does he have AirPods in? Like, how's he?
I mean, it's 2011. He has a cell phone.
Yeah, but does he have it in one hand and then the gun in the other?
I don't know. I think he was shooting in between.
Seems like he's so inconvenienced by this multitask. Like, oh, I gotta kill these people and make this phone call. Like,
no.
It seems like he should at least just put the phone down, like, you know, do one. Like, and second of all, how are you hearing if you're shooting a gun while you're listening? You can barely listen.
He was shooting in between the phone calls.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm imagining that he's, like, doing both at the same time.
No.
Very strict time
you're
frame.
Wrong.
Wow, you're wrong.
Okay, well, the local police actually get to the island less than 30 minutes after the shooting started, but they were told to observe and report because they didn't have the resources to get to the island. When you're looking at the island from the shore, you can see it. You can see the shoreline, like, from the mainland. So it's not very far. It is, like, probably maybe a 10-minute ferry ride at most.
Like, get in a rowboat and just get your ass
over
there.
Well, so they were trying to, but because there was so many officers and whatnot and their gear and whatever, it kept capsizing. And on top of that, 9 of the survivors of the kids there had taken the ferry boat that originally takes a whole bunch of people because they feared more terrorists were actually on the mainland shore. So they fled north with the boat, which is why the police had a problem getting to the island in the first place. And they could have brought a helicopter, but they said that the helicopter would have taken longer to get there than getting there by land. But then they just sat there and waited. So in reality, they should have brought the helicopter out. And it's so sad because you'll see these poor survivors think, oh my God, I hear helicopters, I'm saved. It's fucking news helicopters filming them getting shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
It just, I know I'm not very familiar with the tragedies that have happened in Norway, but they're just completely unprepared to handle this.
Oh my God, and it's in peacetime, so everyone was just devastated and so shocked. And I read a report where it said that 1 in 4 people in Sweden, or in Sweden.
Good job, babe.
1 in 4 people in Norway know someone or affected or knew someone in this tragedy that was hurt by it. 25% of their people.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, like I said, the survivors took the actual ferry boat, and it was almost an hour after Anders started shooting that the SWAT team gets there, but again, they have to wait an additional 15 minutes to get to Utøya because the boat keeps capsizing. And then the water floods the engine, and then it can't start. So it's just problem after problem after problem. It's a perfect storm, for sure. And this island, you can walk back and forth, like, to the end of each island in 10 minutes. So there's nowhere for these poor people to hide.
So they're just running around and he's just hunting them all down.
No, they're trying to hide and then they think, oh, I'm just going to play dead. But this crazy asshole is coming around and shooting them in the head.
Oh my God. This is horrible.
Yeah. So in this part of the episode, I want to focus on the survivors, because there were so many people who were shot and so many people who did survive. I focus mainly on the people who were hurt and survived, because I thought that that was the most impactful. But you also have to take into account the people that survived and didn't have any damage, because emotionally they are so traumatized. Like,
the survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm. And not only the survivor's guilt, but emotionally, imagine how traumatized you are. And then to have no physical scarring to show what happened, it's just even harder, you know?
No, I get it.
So, the GQ correspondent that I mentioned earlier, Sean Flynn, did a special on the attacked titled, "Is He Coming? Is He? Oh God, I Think He Is," which was in the August 2012 issue of GQ. So he had a ton of information on the survivors, which is where I found the following info. One of the survivors, 21-year-old Adrian Precon, tried to swim away, but ended up swimming back after almost drowning because his clothes were weighing him down. Keep in mind, the water that day was 14 degrees Celsius, so 57 degrees Fahrenheit, so freezing.
So you could die almost just from being out in the water.
Mm-hmm, people did. So Adrian played dead on the shore, but like I said, Anders was going around shooting everyone in the head. And on top of this, when I was listening to the Sofa King podcast, they mentioned that he shot something like 180 bullets in the entire time that he was on the island. And there was over 99 people shot. 69 dead, 99 shot. So imagine how accurate he is with these shootings.
He's not missing.
It's terrifying. And on top of that, most of the bullets were fired close range. So this is absolutely stomach-turning. But when after Anders gets arrested, after this nightmare is done, he pauses his fucking interrogation to be seen by a medic because he has a 5 millimeter, which is 2 inches, cut on his hand from, get this, someone's skull shattering because he shot them at such close range.
Poor thing.
He pauses the fucking interview. That's how delusioned he is.
I'm beside myself. They should have stuck their finger in the wound. Like, I don't...
Well, and...
How is he allowed to go to see the medic? Like, no, you need to sit and finish this.
And anywhere else, a lot of the articles say, you know, in the United States, this guy never would have made it out alive, you know? But it's interesting because now we get to hear all about his logic and... And a really interesting quote that I heard him say in the trial is that he was like, "I've never been rejected by anyone in my life." He is clearly rejected throughout his entire life. You know what I mean? So he's clearly in denial.
Yeah, he is maybe schizophrenic. Like, he's just imagining things that aren't there, aren't true.
Well, in the actual beginning of his trial, the courts do reel him. They do diagnose him as a paranoid schizophrenic, but they end up taking it back and saying that he is sane. He just has a narcissistic borderline personality.
I think that was probably an attempt to try him differently. Like, if they tried him as a paranoid schizophrenic, sorry if you hear our dogs, they're also being paranoid schizophrenics outside of our little recording studio, which is our closet. But there's no way with what he's talking about with his upbringing that he's not, I'm not a psychologist, but that just seems like an attempt to get him tried as someone who's sane, because he deserves to not, a hospital's too light for him.
That's true, but the only reason that this kid, Adrian, survives the headshot that Anders inflicts was because there's a raincoat over his head. He was too exhausted to move. He was too exhausted to run because he was so tired from swimming and almost drowning. And Anders shoots him in the head, but he grazes his neck, and the bullet just damages his shoulders. And Anders would actually later say in court that he, quote, spared Adrian because he didn't look far left, which I think that just happened. I think he fucked up. I think he fucked up, and then he found a way to make it more about his agenda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, let me just hone back in on my purpose of killing as many people with the opposite political view as me.
So I want to point out two things about this. Is A, Anders was using hollow point bullets to cause maximum damage. And if anyone knows what that means, or if anyone doesn't know what that means, the bullets explode when they hit their victims. So it leaves shards in all of the survivors that are around today.
Yeah, they're meant to cause damage. They're not like other bullets, which are meant to like go through and through.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's caused maximum damage. And Anders actually did also spare the 8-year-old child of the volunteer police officer because the kid stuck up to Anders. When he tried to shoot him, the kid was like, you already killed my dad, don't take me. So he showed him mercy for whatever reason.
The wow.
Well, here's the thing.
Give
that
8-year-old the medal.
He takes advantage of it again in court and says, oh, well, he was too young to be indoctrinated, so I spared him. Again, for
yet
his
again, pushing his agenda.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So another survivor, a 17-year-old girl named Catherine Lai, was shot in the back, and the bullet went through her lung and ribs before coming out of her stomach. She had to hold a rock to the exit wound for 2 hours while he's on his rampage to stop her bleeding before help arrived. And then to make matters worse, Catherine and then her younger sister, Elizabeth, were frantic earlier that day because when they heard the news of the bombing, they thought that they had lost their father, Freddie, in it because he worked in Oslo. And on top of that, he hadn't been answering his phone, which was so unlike him. And they finally get a hold of him 10 minutes before Anders gets to the island. They speak for 16 minutes before Elizabeth calls her father back at 5:25 p.m. and screams for 2 minutes and 7 seconds before Anders shoots her in the head with a bullet going through her skull and into the phone, destroying it. So her father's on the phone when she dies.
That is heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. So devastating. And then her sister, too. And what makes it even worse is the reports I was reading. Her sister, you know, she was also hurt. Keep in mind, her ribs, her stomach, her lungs, like, this poor girl was horribly, horribly hurt. And she has all this guilt and says to her dad, oh, Elizabeth was the prettier one. She was the smarter one. Why did I survive and not her? That's so sad.
Oh, my God.
Right? Okay, well, according to the Australian Broadcasting Corp, Ingvid Loren Stensrud was also able to survive being shot in the thigh and shoulder by hiding under the dead bodies of her friends, which I think that Anders got distracted by someone, which is why he didn't go through and shoot her in the head. But she eventually used a fellow camper's phone. So keep in mind, this fellow camper is dead, and she lets her family know that she's okay. And after she hangs up the phone, that victim, the person's mom, just kept calling. Like, she could see the picture, she could see the name mom on the fucking phone, and they just kept calling, and she's like, I can't answer this, like, her fucking kid is dead.
Yeah, the emotional trauma she's going through, like, to add that on top, like.
Yeah, isn't that so heartbreaking? And then Grant Rowlings of the UK Sun spotlighted Viljar Hansen, which he's also the main character in the Netflix film July 22, or 22 July. He was shot 5 times in the leg, body, head, and hand. He lost his right eye, so he's blind in his right eye. He lost 3 fingers. He spent months in the hospital, had to relearn how to walk and write, and still has fragments of the bullets so close to his brainstem that he could die from getting hit in the head at any minute.
Oh my God.
And his younger brother was 14 on the island, so he's one of that didn't get hurt, but he watched his brother get shot and almost die. And another article that I read too, which there's so many and so many accounts of the story, but he feels his brain out when he touches his head and feels the blood. He can feel his brain.
I'm sick to my stomach. Like you said, it's not only 69 people who died, but the other, 30 people who also were injured and survived.
There was over 100 people injured, but I think it was over 99 people that were shot.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy. Which, he is so freaking awesome, though, because despite all of this, he's now a councilman in Northern Norway and is still more active in politics than ever before.
Good for him.
Yeah, he was... the movie is really, really good. I highly recommend it. I absolutely loved it. It was so awful, obviously, but the survivors just... I felt like it was so important to tell these stories because these are such amazing people and their kids when this fucking happens, which is... so fucking awful.
Yeah, but you talk about the trauma that Anders had when he was a kid. I mean, he's inflicting that onto all of these people, and they're taking that in. not doing what he's doing and making an excuse to act inappropriate.
They're taking that and they're fueling it with something good. And that's not what Anders did at all, you know?
Right, because like you said, people go through these effed up upbringings where they're abused, they have trauma, and...
They use it for good.
They use it for good. I mean, they... Not even the people who have these great stories, but just end up being decent human beings that raise a family and pay their bills. Like, there's so many more of those cases that actually are out there. It's just... And we can go into whether it's, like, nature versus nurture in another podcast, but it's not an excuse. Like, it's... Mm-mm. How you were raised is not an excuse for you to inflict that pain onto someone else, because he's one person, but he altered what?
The entire population of Norway.
One-fourth of the population knew someone was affected by someone in this shooting. He was one person.
Mm-hmm. And it was the deadliest shooting in Norway since World War II.
Wow.
Yeah. Another... That same article and the film also spotlights a survivor named Lara Rashid, who's an Iraq refugee who fled to Norway as a child, only to survive the attack, quote, unharmed. Like I said, you can't really be unharmed after this, you know. She was physically unharmed, but psychologically, I'm sure, was not going well. But she loses her sister. Her name is Bono. And then I also read another article, which was just heartbreaking. I'm sure it's in my sources cited. I can't remember at the time which one it is, but I'll try to go back and edit it. A police officer who was searching the water for more survivors or more victims that same night of the attack said that there were so many phones ringing from the victims, they were lighting up the shore because the parents were calling over and over and over and over again, and their kids were dead.
Oh my God, that is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That is awful.
This one is really, really sad. I mean, 'cause they're all kids, you know? Like, and like I said, there were kids of the leaders of the Labour Party. So Anders says he wants to hit these people where it hurts most. So that's why he went to that island. Not only to kill that, you know, the mother, quote, mother of Norway, but also to hurt these people in the Labour Party by killing their kids. Sickening.
It's just sad that this, like, political strife between, like, people gets violent in other countries, too.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, in the U.S., mass shootings are so common now, and it's, you see a lot of white nationalists, and not that I'm making an excuse whatsoever, but it's not just the U.S. that is going through this type of issue, you know, like, it happened in Norway 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's modern era.
Well, Matthias Brashler and Monica Fisher of The Guardian did a piece on various survivors of European terrorist attacks, speaking of which, because there's been so many attacks across Europe. And they actually spotlighted Emma Martinovic and Tarje Jensen Beck, who survived Anders' rampage. Martinovic, which is the girl, had bullet fragments removed from her arm after trying to swim to safety with an 11-year-old on her back. She thought that help arrived when she heard the helicopters above, but it was a news crew. And you can find horrific videos and pictures on the internet of the event. Most of the pictures that I saw were blurred out, so at least you could see, like, it was like a white sheet pixelated over the victims, which is still devastating, but somehow I managed to stumble onto pictures that were not edited, were not blurred out, were not covered with sheets, and... You of all people know I have not been able to sleep for the past couple nights.
Yeah, we've been trading off, like, which one of us is.
It's heartbreaking. And you see, like I said, you see the people swimming. And I mean, I get the news people had to go and cover the story. But at the same time, to have the helicopter and not be able to help any of these people. And you see them in the water swimming. It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of 9/11 where... Mm-hmm. People are jumping out the window because mm-hmm. the fire's beneath them and it's...
Burning them alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Beck, which is the guy that's spotlighted in the story, he passes out in the water after being shot in the leg and was helped by other survivors in the water before being picked up by a boat. Which now I want to spotlight a few of the people who were helping rescue some of the kids. Because there's like a campground across the way on the mainland. I think it's called Utkiva or something like that. And the people the campers over there, when they start hearing the shooting and freaking out, and they can see the people waving on the shoreline, they start getting into all their boats or wherever they can and start helping the kids that are in the water. Mm-hmm. So Nick Mayo of the Telegraph spotlighted Hege Dalen and her partner Toril Hansen and three others who were camping on the lakeside, and they were instrumental in the rescue of these kids. They heard shooting, immediately got in the motor dinghies, and started pulling kids out of the water. But some of the survivors were suffering from hypothermia, some of them had gunshot wounds, so not only were they rescuing them, but the people back on the shore were helping take care of them, which is what saved those people who had hypothermia, you know, and had the wounds.
Well, I'm glad there was those people around. I mean, this is such a bad thing, but at least you're spotlighting some of the good that came out of this.
Yeah, exactly. And Elisa Maula of the New York Times reported that Marcel Gleff and Bjorn Huvit and his wife Asa also got into boats to rescue survivors. But they said that some of the kids were so traumatized that Asa had to beg them to get into the boat. And they finally got in after she was like, I'm a mom too. Which is so sad, because if you think about it, he's dressed as a cop. So all these people are running to him thinking that he's helping them, you know, right. Especially after the shooting. And then to realize that he's the shooter, you know?
Wow, his decoy worked, and that's why this was so effective. He was in a perceivable position of power with the police uniform on and just... And like you said, the island was, what, 10 minutes side to side? You could walk it. Mm-hmm. So this is not a big area. It kind of seems like he just keeps sweeping back and forth across the island.
Yeah, there's a picture that I'll post on the website and on Instagram of his journey through the island, which is horrifying. But I did read, I think it's in the same GQ article by that guy, Sean Flynn, where Adrian is like in shock. He's like, there's no way this is happening. Everyone thinks it's fireworks, and like, don't they know what just happened? There was a fucking bombing, like, what's happening? And then they realize that what's going on, and Anders goes tent by tent to see if there's people hiding out to kill them. So there's nowhere for these poor people to hide. And I guess one of the girls was in like the shower block or something and had no idea what was happening, so she gets out and she just starts casually walking by thinking that Anders is just a police officer. And then Adrian, that kid that I first spotlighted, just sees her get gunned down.
Oh my God.
Then that's when he realizes that he needs to actually run.
Like you said, even if you weren't shot, to see that happen to you, mm-hmm. That's
the post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, that's like, you know, so the first shooting since World War II, I mean, that's like the kind of PTSD that soldiers get, mm-hmm. seeing their friends get shot like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so here's a crazy story, too. So, according to News 24 and Radio Free Europe Radio Library, another survivor, Anzor Dukev, was mistakenly thought to be Anders' accomplice after being, quote, too calm and not being able to provide ID. I read a couple reports, and like I said, the Sofa King podcast, they said that his haircut was different than his ID, and then I read a couple reports saying he had no ID, which, I'm sorry, half of these poor kids probably stripped down to get into the water, and then on top of that, I think that's the last thing they're thinking about, you know? Right.
Yeah, if you're running and you're swimming through the water, like, let alone, like, say your wallet wasn't next to you and all this stuff went down, like...
Mm-hmm. Well, so the reason that he was too calm was because he emigrated to Norway from Chechnya as a boy and had witnessed the horrors of the civil war there. He was quoted saying that he had seen dogs eating dead bodies in his homeland. Mm-hmm. And then to go through this.
I mean, not to profile anyone, but I mean, someone needs to check up with that kid and make sure that he's all...
No, he I'm sure he's not okay, because he was held for 17 hours while his family thought he was dead after getting rescued. Meanwhile, this poor kid is just a fucking survivor. So he's,
Of the Civil War,
of the shooting. He's held for 17 hours in the same place that Anders is held, and then is finally released. And his poor family is probably so relieved, but imagine going through that.
I can't.
And so David Rosenberg with Slate did a profile on the Utoya survivors 2 years after the attack. Andrea Gestvang took portraits of the victims, so this is where I found the following survivor stories. Ylva Helen Schwanke was 15 at the time of the attack and was shot 5 times. She survived. 17-year-old Cecily Hirschflausen was shot in the cheek, but the bullet hit her wisdom tooth, which was what saved her life. She also lost her arm. Erin Kristen Kier was 20 at the time and was shot 3 times.
Can we roll back to how this girl's wisdom tooth saved her life?
Right? Isn't that fucking insane?
So that goes to show you, do not get your wisdom teeth taken out, people. It's a scam. It will save your life.
No. I think that was divine intervention, honestly.
Imagine if she had, like, the procedure scheduled for, like, the week after.
Crazy. Yeah, I know.
We just have to get that done now.
So, Ina Liebach was 21, was shot 5 times. Other campers hid her in the forest and put pressure on her wounds, which was what saved her life.
And like you said, this is getting shot 5 times with hollow point bullets. So they're, that's why so many of these people have these injuries, is the bullet fragments are just chilling in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, what did I say?
What's his name? I honestly do not blame you for forgetting any of these.
Villar,
yes.
Which is the guy, he is like one of the main characters in the movie, and he loses his eyesight because the bullet explodes in his brain. So sad.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, like, it was the Geneva Convention or anything outlawed hollow point bullets, but there's a reason why, like, our military does not use them. They're, like, unethical.
Marte Odegaarden was 17 at the time of the attack and suffered 2 shots through the back, causing massive internal bleeding, a ruptured kidney, and a paralyzed leg. Mohamed Hamed Adi, 21 at the time of the attack, was in a coma for 2 months after he was shot in the left shoulder, leg, and chest, which ultimately resulted in the amputation of his leg and arm. 20-year-old Han Hesto Ness was shot in her arm, little left finger, and neck. Her finger had to be amputated, and a vertebrae in her neck was shattered. Marte, oh my god, do you hear Tank? I mean Ty?
Ty, we're in here. What's wrong with a pug?
Do you want to say hi?
Yo, what, itchy butt?
Tinky, come say hi.
Come say hi, Tinky. This is our mascot. Itchy Bum and Captain Borg. Alright, can you guys be good for me, please? Just give us, like, 10 more minutes, please. I know.
It's so hard being a little pug in this world.
I promise I'll give you so much love and affection if you just give me, like, 5.
Yes, unfortunately, well, fortunately, I should say, this horror story is almost over. It is nearing the end. Like I said, I wanted to spotlight the survivors because although this is such a horrible attack, these people showed so much strength and resilience, and they were kids when this happened.
Yeah, shout out to these Norwegian
badasses.
Dudes. Yeah, seriously, I mean, I have no clue how I would act in one of these situations, but some of these kids were like, well, Jesus.
My mom has always told me, because, you know, school shootings have gotten a lot more common. Thankfully, we didn't really have to worry about this when we were in high school. It got way more common after we got out, you know. I had one scare in community college where there was a guy with a gun on campus at COC.
Were we at the school? Yeah, at the same time. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So, that was horrible. I can't imagine if it actually, you know, happened, you know. But I was going to say, my mom always was like, you know, play dead, because then at that point they just will move on. But this guy, you can't play dead. He came and he shot you. So
there
was other survivors, you know, I didn't cover all of them. They're amazing, amazing people. But some of them saved some of the younger kids because they just kept moving. If they heard the guy moving, they would keep moving. And that was how they stayed alive.
Yeah, because it's not like this is somewhere in the mainland that you can just keep running north or something like. And they couldn't even swim because it was such cold water. Mm-hmm. Like,
there was one boy who died drowning in the water. He died of drowning. And then there was another boy who was so scared that he fell off a cliff and died because he fell off the cliff. So he's there. Those two are still part of the 69.
Yeah, it's collateral.
Mm-hmm, but not the shooting victims. And last but not least, that the victims that I spotlighted, Marte Fiving Smith was shot in the head. The bullet missed her brain by 2 millimeters, less than an inch. So, you know, for some, you know, obviously there's such a tragedy, I feel like it's wrong for me to say, oh, that was divine intervention, because 69 other people died, you know?
And she still got shot.
Uh-huh. So, I don't know what the... I can't.
It's hard to, like you said, fold in your, like, how does God play into that? Yeah, it's really muddy and it's a really shitty situation, but the people who are alive, that's, like, that is a gift from God. That is them surviving a horrible accident for, I mean, yes, the police should have been there sooner, but imagine if it took them another 30 minutes. Like, there's a chance that
even
all people, of them could have died. Like, yeah.
Well, and I researched, because there was 500 kids, over 500 kids. I saw reports of 500, I saw reports of 600, I saw reports of 630, 550, you know, so somewhere between 500 and 600 kids.
He killed over 10% of them.
Mm-hmm. He killed over 10% of them. But on top of that, you also have to realize the strength of all those people who survived. So I feel like it's a big, big, big... I mean, there's also studies right now in Norway of the effect of the post-traumatic stress that these people are going through. Like, that poor parent who heard his daughter die.
Yeah.
You know, how do you go back to work after that? How do you do anything after that, you know? Right. And then on top of that, he has to live his life because his other daughter survived. You know, it's just traumatizing. It's horrible. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to spotlight this. Like I said, I have not been sleeping because, unfortunately, this is so traumatizing. I've been dreaming about it. But I feel like it needed to be heard. I had no idea this happened. No fucking idea.
Yeah, 69. That's a lot of people.
So, with the bombing, it's 77 dead and over 300 injured.
That is... That's on par of, like, other terrorist attacks in the world.
Mm-hmm. So, after the attack, let's talk about it. Stephanie Marsh of The Independent wrote that on July 22nd, 2011, when police confronted Baring, which you remember is Anders' mom, about what her son had done on Utøya, the first thing she said was, "How could he do this to me?"
How selfish is she?
Just wait. The next thing she says is, "It's almost worse than being lesbian or homosexual. It's the very worst thing that could happen to a person. What will people say about me?"
That you're a bad mother and you're a piece of shit?
Yeah. Unfortunately, she's dead, which...
Fortunately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but this woman played a clear part in raising this monster. And, you know, at least the father can take responsibility. He's haunted by this every single day of his life, you know?
No matter what, like, if you were raising your child and they did this, like, you did something or allowed something to happen that your child did this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. It's very hard. Well, Anders' trial began April 16th, 2012, a few days after courts found Anders criminally sane. So, I mentioned in the beginning, they originally found him as a paranoid schizophrenic, but, like you kind of touched on, they were like, no, fuck this, because if he was found criminally insane or paranoid schizophrenic, he would have gone to a mental hospital. He wouldn't have gone to jail for the rest of his life.
Right. So, and he deserves to be in prison, if not, whatever your view on capital punishment.
So, there's no capital punishment in Norway. There's not even life sentences in Norway.
I don't know. See, here's my thing. Yeah, though, I have to imagine he's going to be in solitary confinement. Like, he's not going to be in general population, but I don't know. If you go away with the death penalty, I would like for them to be at least put in general population, for them to get their ass beat. Like, if you're going to punish them, like...
Well, it's interesting because as I'm reading all of these survivor stories and whatnot, like, they all pride themselves in the fact that this guy survived and that this guy is in jail right now. And they're still treating him with respect because they're all so proud of their country. They're so proud of Norway and, like, their democracy. They came together. The people in the Labour Party, which was the party that suffered all of these terrible losses, the membership rose so much and so many more young people participated because of this. So if anything, we feel like, I feel like, he had the opposite effect. He brought so many more people together, and as terrible as this was, like, at least something good came out of it.
Right, at least his agenda wasn't pushed further. Like, if mm-hmm. anything, like you said, it went completely in the opposite direction. It strengthened their party, if anything. That's, like you said, shout out to Norway for the strength that they showed during this.
Yeah.
If I'm not here to make a political statement, but I mean, if we showed any, like, semblance of that amount of unity, like...
Well, and like I said, I also was reading about his, we'll get to that right now, but the sentencing and the gun laws and everything in Norway, and it's just so different than that of the United States. They don't have life sentences in Norway. They have the option. The maximum sentence is 21 years, but they can keep adding 5 years every, like, whenever your time is up, if they think you're a threat to society, which he will continuously be a threat to society, because in his fucking trial, he says, and I quote, he would have liked to kill more people, and he would do it again if he could.
Yeah, you need to give him the Supermax deal. Lifetime.
And actually, interestingly enough, the first judge that was assigned to his case was dismissed because he started posting online that he wished Norway had the death penalty.
Yeah, I'm...
Can't blame him.
I go back and forth on, like, my personal view of capital punishment, but you killed that many people. It's so hard for me to justify that you deserve to get a free meal and be protected and free healthcare. Like, if anything, yeah.
Well, like I said, he was found guilty. He was found insane. He's serving time. He's serving 21 years right now in a jail. Mm-hmm. In a little south of Oslo.
With a team option for 5 more years.
Yes, he is going to be in jail for the rest of his life. We can only hope. But let's reiterate, his goals were to kill the prime minister, to kill the previous prime minister, dismantle the government, and kill the children of the elite, or, quote, leaders of tomorrow. And throughout his rampage, he said, you will die today, Marxists. You're all going to die. Like, he was shouting. And some of the survivors said that he looked happy. Some of them said that he just looked stone cold, like, nothing, no emotion. But, I mean, if you're shouting, you will die today, Marxists, or you're going to all die today. And the people that were swimming away, he aimed for them. He shot at the water. He was like, you can't get away from me. That's horrifying.
He's a psycho.
Well, and then when the actual police and the SWAT got there, which they looked similar, I mean, obviously his was a makeshift costume, but these poor kids were crying, saying, please put down your weapons, don't kill us, because they thought...
They have no clue.
Yeah, they have no idea what's happening.
Their heads, Jesus.
And also, on top of this, he claimed that he was anti-Islam, anti-multiculturalism, he wanted Norway to go back to the way it was, all white, whatever. But I mean, the articles I was reading, the lady that did the book, Åsne Sirstad, they all think that this is just a front for his craziness, because he had Pakistani friends when he was a kid. He tried to be in the hip-hop scene, you know, so we all think that's a front. But it did also come out in his later years that he was more racist, so maybe he just developed it. Maybe something happened in the later years, you know? Maybe, I don't know. But, okay, so let's get to this. This is actually crazy. Anders sues Norway for inhumane treatment when he's in jail because he's only in solitary. They restrict his mail. He can only write certain things. They watch everything going in and out. You know, he has no communication. The only person he could see was his mom and his lawyer.
Which is still...
But get this. He has a fucking PlayStation in his jail. And I'm done.
No. No, no, give me his PS4 name, please.
It's a PlayStation 2, and he said it's absolutely ridiculous that it's not upgraded to a PS3.
Oh my god. I can't.
His cell has 3 rooms. Christian's sweating right now. He's so mad.
Oh my god. His cell should be what we're recording in right now.
Yeah. Like 2 feet by 1 foot.
3 rooms?
Yeah.
3 rooms?
Mm-hmm. So, you know what's even crazier? They rule in his favor that it was inhumane.
Stop.
But the good news is the Supreme Court of Norway then overrules that ruling and says that he doesn't deserve that. He has to be in solitary at this threat of at his own safety, the safety of the country. And then they also say on top of that, they're not going to hear the case again. So what's done is done. He is in solitary for the rest of his sentence.
Oh, I'm just so blown that he thinks that he deserves anything.
So, this is... He's such an odd duck, because after the hearing or whatever is overruled and he is back in solitary, he changes his name to Fjelltoft Hansen, which is so bizarre, because Fjelt is idiot in Norwegian.
Nope, that's nice. I wonder if maybe the person who did it just changed it. Like, yep, like he wrote something similar, and they're like, nah, this is it. And why are you allowed to change your name if you're in prison, first of all?
Well, you know what's even worse? He's studying in prison. He has registered for a college class. So there was like this opinion piece.
I mean, University of Phoenix is gonna take your money. You got it. Like, come on now. They're like, well, you got a debit card? That's fine. Like, you have internet connection? Yeah, cool. We'll take you.
So you remember how you asked what weapons he had with him? So his handgun, his pistol, guess what he fucking named it?
Please tell me. I have no clue.
Mjolnir. Doesn't it ruin it for you?
Yeah.
He names the other ones like also part of like Thor's whatever. It was so funny in the Sofa King episode. Like I said, I cannot recommend this podcast enough because it was hilarious. They're like, oh, I don't know what the other gun is, but we're just gonna call it Bjork.
I'm weak.
That's why I was like, Christian, you have to listen to these guys. They're freaking hilarious. But yeah, that's not my joke. That's theirs. Please go listen to them. Episode 253. And this is episode 3 of our podcast, which is the horror's finally over.
I have the sweat has gone from my neck down to the crevices of my butt crack now. And just pure anxiety of going through this.
Yeah, I mean, the last couple episodes have been shorter, so I definitely wanted to put more detail. Mm-hmm. But there was so many victims, so many survivors, so many people affected that there was so much information I had to include.
And it was like two terrorist events. I mean, he did the bomb and then he went and was in north. He went to the island
mm-hmm.
after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bombing, it's still to this, or I mean, when I was reading the articles, so probably about like 5 years ago, the articles at the time were 5 years old. They were still rebuilding the buildings, you know?
Because yeah, like you said, he had a whole metric ton of manure. And for people who like haven't watched like CSI or NCIS, but you add a couple blasting caps to that and you have a bomb that can affect, like I said, 2 square blocks. Every window was shattered.
He was following in, or his inspiration was the Oklahoma City bombing, in which was Timothy McVeigh. Mm-hmm. And that one killed 168 people.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, that one was brutal too, which maybe we'll cover that in the future because I don't know too much about
that
one.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, but that is episode 3, which, like I said, these survivors are amazing.
Badass.
Yeah. I can only hope one day to be as awesome as they are. I really want to go visit Norway and go visit the...
Show your respects.
Yeah. No, so, what's his name? The guy I keep asking about his name?
Oh, I cannot remember.
Valyar? Valyar?
Valium.
Valium? Oh, gosh.
Voldemort. Vegeta.
No, his name is Vilar. Viljar. Viljar. Well, he's from like the northernmost town in Norway, which is, I think it's called like Volsbard or something.
Volkswagen.
Something crazy I can't pronounce. And it's like one of the most northernmost inhabited parts of the world.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like polar bears are in their town. And so I want to go fucking visit and see, and I guess like there's a specific time, I think it starts in October, so coming up, where you can see the northern lights and like the aurora.
That's
borealis.
So cool.
Yeah, so I really want to go up there. I think it would be awesome. Well, that is the end of our episode. We appreciate you guys listening in. I know it was brutal. I want to say thank you. Please, please, please go rate us, subscribe us. I don't know if, hopefully we're available on Apple at this fucking point, but yeah. I'm about to lose my fucking mind with
that. Yeah, if not, we're driving up to freaking Northern California.
Silicon Valley. Get my fucking podcast going.
Shove your RSS feed where the sun don't shine.
Yeah. So right now we're still available on Spotify, Podbean, Anchor, all those normal sites. We'll post
Pocket
it.
Cast.
Yeah. Google Podcasts now.
Spotify.
And please definitely go check out our website and our Instagram. Follow us on social media. I work really hard on it. Would really appreciate
a
follow.
Honestly, if your company needs something with that level of quality.
Yes, I would love to. Hit me up. Anyways, that's the end of our episode. I hope that you guys send some case suggestions our way so that we can keep doing episodes that you guys want to hear. I hope this covered the mass shootings episode that you guys were looking to hear about. I think that's it for now.
Let's go get our pups. I know
this is the crime couple tuning out.
Bye-bye.